about all day talk. Over here, something sensitive. We're playing today. We'll play more in the body of town. 7 cents, 7 years today.
7 cents today, 7 cents. 7 cents, all dead justice. All I can do is advise you.
Eight son of bucks, and you guarantee you if you pull today and we pull what we've got to pull today, you have $11 in your pocket.
This scene is not taking place in the Congo. It has nothing to do with Johannesburg or Cape Town. It is not Nyasaland or Nigeria. This is Florida. These are citizens of the United States, 1960. This is a shape-up for migrant workers. The hawkers are chanting the going peace rate at the various fields. This is the way the humans who harvest the food for the best-fed people in the world get hired. One farmer looked at this and said, "We used to own our slaves. Now we just rent them." The Secretary of Labor looked at the migrant plight and said,
"I think they're the great mass of what I've called the excluded Americans. They are people who cry out, workers and their children and their wives, who cry out for some assistance, and whose plight is a shame. It's a shame in America."
The president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, the largest farmers organization, says,
"I think that most social workers would agree that it's better for a man to be employed, even if his capacity is such as to limit his income. And we take the position that it's far better to have thousands of these folks who are practically unemployable, earning some money, doing some productive work for at least a few days in a year."
This is an American story that begins in Florida and ends in New Jersey and New York State with the harvest. It is a 1960 Grapes of Wrath that begins at the Mexican border in California and ends in Oregon and Washington. It is the story of men and women and children who work 136 days of the year and average $900 a year. They travel in buses. They ride trucks. They follow the sun.
Well, I don't know. It don't look like we'll ever get ahead. I guess we'll just have to keep going till we can find something better.
A minister named Cassidy, who works with them, says,
"They are just as bad as the slaves. Only on name they are not a slave, but in the way they are treated, they are worse than slaves. And somebody has to make thousands of dollars out of his sweat. Is that a slave or not?"
They are the migrants, workers in the sweatshops of the soil, the harvest of shame.
That was Edward R. Murrow beginning the CBS Reports broadcast of November 25th, 1960. Before that Thanksgiving Day, the migrant worker was not a national issue. The word migrant was not instantly understood to mean misery. After seeing this broadcast of 13 years ago, you may understand why that changed.
Now, Edward R. Murrow.
This is CBS Reports, Harvest of Shame. It has to do with the men, women, and children who harvest the crops in this country of ours, the best-fed nation on earth. These are the forgotten people, the underprotected, the undereducated, the underclothed, the underfed. We present this report on Thanksgiving because were it not for the labor of the people you are going to meet, you might not starve, but your table would not be laden with the luxuries that we have all come to regard as essentials. We should like you to meet some of your fellow citizens who harvest the food for the best-fed nation on earth.
David Lowe talks to Mrs. Doby, 34 years old, mother of 9 children.
Mrs. Doby, what things do you pick up north?
We pick strawberries and cherries.
Who works with you out of this family here?
Everybody except the baby.
Who takes care of them in the field?
Well, they just kindly stay along with us or take care of themselves. The one that can't walk usually stays in the baby buggy.
What is an average dinner for the family?
Well, we just... You mean, what do we have in...
Yes.
We... Well, I cook a pot of beans and fry some potatoes or some corn or something like that.
How many quarts of milk do you buy for the children?
Well, we don't have milk except maybe when we draw our paycheck, we have milk about once a week.
For all these children, you have
the
milk?
The baby has, she is on the bottle, and she uses about 15 cans of milk a week. But the older children have milk about once a week.
Do they like to drink milk, Mrs. Dilby?
Yes, they like milk.
The only reason I asked that question, I was quite shocked that they had milk only once a week.
Just thought they didn't like it, but they like milk, but it's, well, there's so many, a gallon of milk will make them a glass around, and so we just can't afford it every day.
What do you want most for your children, Mrs. Dilby?
Well, I'd like for them to have a career, whatever they want to be when they got older. Of course, the smaller ones, they've not... don't realize yet to know what they'd like to be. But the older girl, she'd like to go to school if she could. Of course, she'll probably be like the boy, have to quit as soon as she's old enough. She really likes to go to school, but she had to miss last week because she had to keep the baby for me to work.
Mrs. Dilby, wouldn't you ever care to have a house of your own?
I'd like to have a house if... We plan to buy one if we could ever get enough to pay down on one. We'd buy one.
Do you think this will ever happen?
Well, it don't seem like it.
This is Belgrade, Florida, where the exodus has its beginning every year. Migrants call it their home, but the circus people call their winter quarters their Sarasota. From towns like this throughout Florida and throughout the South, the 2 to 3 millions move out on their annual migration, which ends in late November. They carry with them whatever little they possess. Whatever little they are. At the Okeechobee labor camp, while families were preparing to move north, there was still some work in the bean fields. Children, as usual, were left to fend for themselves.
Jerome, how old are you?
9. 9?
Do you go to school?
Yes.
Where do you go to school, Jerome?
At the Okeechobee Elementary School.
I see. What is your sister's name?
Lois.
That's Lois. And what are your other sisters' names?
Catherine and Beulah.
Catherine and Beulah. What happened to your foot, Jerome?
Dug a nail in out there by the washhouse.
So you drove a nail in out by the washhouse. What did your mother do for that?
Put some alcohol on.
Where do you sleep, Jerome?
In this bed.
You have this big bed?
Yes.
What happened? How did you get that hole in that bed there, Jerome?
Rats.
The what?
Rats.
Now, Jerome, you are taking care of Kathy, of Beulah, and Lois.
Yes, sir.
Now, are you going to give them lunch today?
Yes.
What are you going to feed them?
Almost.
Do you have any food here to give them?
Yes.
I see. What time does your mother come home?
Almost.
The following day, Aline King, the mother of Jerome, Kathy, Lois, and Beulah, again was picking beans.
Aileen King, I saw your children yesterday at the Okeechobee camp. Why didn't you put them in the nursery?
I don't make enough to pay for it.
How much does it cost to put them in?
85 cents.
85 cents.
That's right.
Aileen, what time did you come out the field this morning?
6 o'clock.
What time would you get home?
About 3:30 or 4 o'clock.
6 this morning to 4 o'clock this afternoon.
That's right.
How much did you earn?
$1.
$1?
That's right. $1.
Is that because the beans were of poor quality?
That's right.
Has this happened before?
That's right.
How much will your food cost you today?
About $2.
Aileen, how old are you?
29.
How many children do you have?
14.
How old were you when you first started working in the fields?
8.
You've been working 21 years in the fields?
That's right.
Aileen, do you ever think you'll be able to get out of this kind of work?
No, sir.
All the migrants travel fourth class. If there is a privileged class, they ride in their own jalopy, in the best Jode family tradition. The long journey begins. Through Atlanta, Nashville, Indianapolis, en route to the fields and orchards of America. Lowell has been following the migrants for the past 9 months. Some are freewheelers who travel as a family unit. He met the Parsons family as they were about to leave Belgrade Tomatoes for Indiana strawberries.
Mr. Parsons, do you think the farmers you work for care about your problems?
No, sir. They're not in particular worried about you. They just want their stuff out and you get away as quick as possible.
Would you say that you're welcomed when you're needed?
Well, that is the only time that you are welcome is when they are needing you. They're friendly and everything, but once they're done with you, well, they'd rather for you to move.
Do they ever ask you to leave their places?
Oh, yeah. They tell you if you're finishing up like tomorrow, well, they had rather for you to be out and gone in about 3 days, and that way it'll cut down on their electric bills and all the other stuff.
What do you want most in this world for you and your family?
I'd like for my family to be well, stay together as much as possible. I'd like to be on a farm somewhere out away from so many people, so where they could attend one church and be interested mostly in one school. And that way, I believe they'd all be better satisfied.
Mr. Parsons, do you think this will ever happen?
Not the rate that I'm going now, no.
Most of them ride 1,500 to 2,000 miles to work in vehicles owned by crew leaders who recruit the workers for the migration north. The vegetables the migrants picked yesterday move north swiftly on rails. Produce en route to the tables of America by a trailer is refrigerated and carefully packed to prevent bruising. Cattle carried to market by federal regulation must be watered, fed, and rested for 5 hours every 28 hours. People, men, women, and children, are carried to the fields of the North in journeys as long as 4 days and 3 nights. They often ride 10 hours without stop for food or facilities. The first stop is normally at Yulee, Florida, 1 mile from the Georgia border, a checkpoint for farm labor leaving the state.
Okay.
There are other stops, Kingsland, Georgia, for bread and sandwich meat. Darien, Georgia, for facility. A roadside stop en route in South Carolina.
Get on.
1,000 miles north of Belgrade, Florida, by way of U.S. Route 17 and 301, through Jacksonville, Savannah, Charleston, Wilmington, and New Bern, is Elizabeth City, North Carolina. A bean stop, good for 6 weeks' work. This camp was home for 40 days for the families of Tom Lockett's crew, now 30 hours out of Belgrade.
Ms. Wakely, how many years have you been working in agriculture, in the fields?
Oh, frankly, all of my life, I haven't did no other work much but in the field. All of my life, I raised all my kids working in the field.
I noticed that there's some straw over there. What is that for?
Well, that was the straw they brought for the people to sleep on.
Well, weren't mattresses supplied here?
They used to be, but they ain't now.
Mrs. Blakely, where is the water supply over here?
That's it right there.
For how many people?
For this and that old yard. They all use the same.
And how many bathrooms are there here?
Now.
Where do you use the bathroom? Where are the facilities?
Don't have one. We use our tin tubes.
Mrs. Brown, how did the children fare on the journey up north?
Well, they got fretful, you know, and you know, got so riding, handling them. But we made it.
Miss Brown, may I ask how old you are?
I'm 37.
Mrs. Brown, how many years have you been working in the fields?
All my life.
Do you remember how old you were when you started?
I was about 8 years old.
Would you like to get out of this work?
I sure would.
Do you think you'll ever be able to?
I'm hoping so.
Do you think you'll be able to, though?
I don't know.
20 miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, the workers, driven 900 miles north by crew leader Norman Hall, picked beans at the prevailing rate of 50 cents a hamper. Lunch is not a picnic, whether brought from the labor camp or purchased at the open-air kitchen, or in a bottle heated by the rays of the sun.
In a survey in 21 states conducted by the National Council of Churches, the migrants themselves listed the evils of labor camp life. Bad housing, flies, mosquitoes, dirty beds and mattresses, unsanitary toilets, and lack of hot water for bathing. One employer of hundreds of migrant laborers was asked, are they happy people?
Well, I guess they got a little gypsy in their blood. They just like it. A lot of them wouldn't do anything else. A lot of them don't know any different. That's all they want to do. They love it. They love to go from place to place. They don't have a worry in the world. They're happier than we are. Today, they eat. Tomorrow, they don't worry about. They're the happiest race of people on earth.
Mr. Jones, do you think that the migratory laborer makes a living wage?
They make a poor living. In other words, sometimes it's just like the farmer. Sometimes when things are good, when the yields are good and they can make good money, they make a good living. But take year in and year out from different seasons, different sections of the country, I'd say no, they make a poor living.
CBS reports Harvest of Shame will continue.
To some people on this block, this won't be a beautiful day. All it'll bring is the sneezing and sniffling of hay fever. Some will take aspirin. Well, aspirin doesn't relieve the sneezing and sniffling at all. Others will take cold pills, which help, but may contain extra drugs and aren't for hay fever. Now, what they should be taking is something specifically made for hay fever, Allarest. Allarest tablets or capsules. It's made just for what you've got.
You know something about germs? You can smell them. Because they're growing. In here, in here, in here. Lysol brand spray disinfectant kills germs, including germs that cause odors on surfaces where they grow. Killing germs where they grow. For that, you want Lysol. And here in the air, Lysol spray destroys odors fast when they happen. Doesn't cover up, really cleans the air. Lysol brand spray disinfectant.
Your tomorrow will be brighter than today when Hughes Rudd and Sally Quinn give the morning news a new look starting 1 week from tomorrow on CBS.
Look at those legs. Long, short, thick, thin. Yet some pantyhose people try to tell you that they're one size fits all.
Balderdash!
That's why Safeway has come up with a full range of sizes and a color code plan to help you find the right size. You'll find the color code size selector as easy as 1, 2, 3. Just match the color code with the color of the price tag. Safeway pantyhose.
Since we're neighbors, let's be friends. Safeway.
Then Williams has the news tonight at 7.
Today, Jeanette Sears' hair will be blown, tousled, and looked at a lot. So she uses VO5 shampoo for hair that's rainwater fresh, rainwater clean. Then VO5 hairspray to hold her hair. Keep it looking good all day. Alberto VO5 shampoo and Alberto VO5 hairspray. When you have only one chance to look good all day long.
Hey, Charlie, what you gonna do?
Play polo.
Oh, what's polo?
It's where guys drive around on horses and rap each other. A good taste activity. Right, Starkist?
But, Charlie, Starkist don't want tunas with good taste. Starkist wants tunas that taste good.
Hey.
Sorry, Charlie. Only good-tasting tuna get to be Starkist. Good-tasting 100% tuna filet.
This is good-tasting tuna.
Get good taste. Get Starkist.
Every year, as predictable as the seasons, there are accidents resulting in death and serious injury to these laborers. On June 6, 1957, at the intersection of U.S. Route 301 and State Highway 102, 9 miles from Fayetteville, North Carolina, 21 migrants were killed, 17 males, 3 females, and a baby boy. The police report stated one of the causes of the high loss of life was the packaging of the occupants of the truck.
Today, only 6 states have laws providing for the safe transportation of migrants within their borders. The state of North Carolina is not one of the 6.
Secretary of Labor Mitchell.
Hardly a year goes by that we don't read in the paper of some very serious accident where sometimes a dozen or more people have been killed purely because there is no interstate standard with regard to safety.
Another complication of the migrant stream is the constant flow of foreign workers into the available pool of domestic workers. Hundreds of thousands of Mexican braceros and thousands of offshore laborers from the Caribbean area, hired by contract, depress the wage scale of the domestic migrant. This controversy is most bitter on the West Coast. Joseph Woods, a Marine combat veteran of the Pacific, competes against the braceros. Lowe talked to the Woods family under a tree, which was their home in California.
Mr. Woods, how did you happen to pick this spot to camp?
Well, someone told us about it, and they said it was all right to camp here.
Where do you get your water supply?
We go to town after it.
And how do you bring it back here?
In can. We have a 10-gallon can.
Okay. What do you use for sanitary facilities, Mr. Woods?
Well, just get by the best we can.
How many days will you have to be picking cherries in order to find enough money to move into a house, Mr.
Well, probably quite a few. They usually want a month's rent in advance, so by the time the cherries are over here, we'll be moving somewhere else anyway.
Mrs. Wood, tell me about the children. Do they go out in the orchards and work with you when you work?
Well, we have taken them out sometimes, Russ, but they're a little too small to work.
Who takes care of them here?
My father stays here and takes care of them, usually.
Do you think that you'll ever make enough money picking fruit, Mr. Woods, in order to get settled down in one place and have a home of your own?
I don't think so.
Throughout the United States, there are others, like the Woods family, who are not able to enjoy the luxury of living in a labor camp. In New Jersey, a few miles from Princeton, is this labor camp. There are 2 water taps and 2 outhouses. Families live in one room, usually in one bed. The single men live in the bull pit. Their space, 1 bunk. 4 people live in this room in New Jersey. A family of 6 will move into this room. In Shenango County, New York State, a farm labor camp. The ultimate goal of Ed King's crew,
1,257 miles from Belgrade. The migrant mission serves 1/2 pint of milk and 1 cracker to each child. This is their lunch. Their parents eat lunch in the field, sometimes 75 miles away. This is the living space of Aline King and her 5 children. The room is similar to their winter quarters in Belgrade, only smaller. Charles Schumann, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, says,
"We're the only group of people that furnish housing for our workers. And we furnish these extra benefits, perquisites. Some sections call it the furnish. And it's almost impossible to calculate the value of these added benefits. At the same time, we don't condone inadequate housing."
Mr. Schumann, why does the American Farm Bureau Federation so violently oppose federal legislation?
"I think there'll be more rapid progress with state regulation than there will be with federal regulation. We think that federal legislation will follow the route that almost all federal legislation does of additional and more stringent and more regulations with more and more red tape and more cutting to a certain pattern all over the country. And in fact, it would probably rule out the use of migrant labor very quickly."
The middleman between the farmer and the migrant is the crew leader, a remnant of the padrone system in wide use 60 years ago. Ed King, a crew leader, says,
"Well, a crew leader, he have to be the father and mother and all when he takes this crew out, because the whole crew will mostly be dependent direct on him."
Reverend Michael Cassidy, who travels with the migrants, says,
"Well, some of the crew leaders, they are good, but the majority of them, they are bad. They are so bad that they are the worst that they can be. They're trying to skin alive these migrants. They take every dime they make. They try every scheme as possible. For instance, they pay the owner, the grower, pay them 45 cents to pick a crate of tomatoes. And then they turn around, they pay the labor 12 cents at the most. And they have 40 or 50 or 100 people picking tomatoes. I know a man last year making here, right in here, $14,000, a crew leader. And all the men they left in here, and I met him in Alabama, they were broke. They didn't have a dime because they didn't make the money themselves."
Everyone who knows anything about this situation agrees that the best hope for the future of the migrants lies in the education of their children. But for the children of migrants, education is not easy to come by. There are 600,000 of them. Most state child labor laws ignore farm children. And so far as the children of migrants are concerned, almost without exception, they leave school at the age of 16 forever. The United States Office of Education reports that the migratory workers have the highest rate of illiteracy in the country. Approximately 1 out of every 500 children whose parents are still migrant laborers finishes grade school. Approximately 1 out of every 5,000 ever finishes high school. And there is no case upon the record of the child of a migrant laborer ever receiving a college diploma. Only 6 states have summer schools for migrants. The New Jersey School Center is at Cranberry.
Laura, how old are you?
11.
11, what grade are you in?
In the
sixth grade. Do you intend to go to high school, Laura?
Yeah.
What would you like to be?
I'd like to be a teacher.
What would you like to teach?
I like to teach the fifth grade.
What do you think about going to school here in Cranberry, New Jersey area?
I like it.
Well, good. Do you have any idea what you want to do when you grow up?
Be a teacher.
Well, good. How old are you, Patricia?
8.
What
Nine.
Grade? 9. What grade are you in?
4.
Do you have any idea what you want to be when you grow up?
Yeah.
What's that?
A nurse.
Otis, what would you like to do when you grow up?
Be a doctor.
You going to be a doctor?
Yes.
What kind of a doctor do you know?
I'd rather be a dentist.
A dentist?
Teeth.
Mrs. Christine Shack, their teacher, was asked about her pupils.
Mrs. Shack, do your pupils, who are most of them children of migrant families, are they anxious to get an education?
Terribly anxious, even more so than the child in the normal school year.
Do they get any help from their parents as far as schoolwork is concerned?
Usually you will find that the parents themselves are not educated. When we go out to enroll the children, oftentimes the parent will make an X and the person interviewing will have to sign it in order to get permission for the child to be enrolled in school.
Mrs. Shack, how does this problem affect you personally?
I think maybe I feel a bit of responsibility toward these children because I realize that we here in New Jersey reap the benefits of their parents' labor, and the children are suffering because their parents are here doing this.
I saw one bright little girl. Her name was Laura Weeks. Will she really have a chance to continue her education?
Laura is from a rural area in Florida, and she is from an exceedingly large family. In fact, I believe there are 8 or 9 girls, all girls in the family. They have been coming to New Jersey now for about 3 or 4 years, to my knowledge. Laura is one of my returning pupils. I've seen great progress from year to year in Laura. We've had her for 3 sessions. However, I think because of the family's financial conditions and the size of the family and the fact that she is in a rural area, that she probably will get no farther than upper junior high school or maybe complete high school with luck.
Of the beauty of the gods, how they looked. Oh, yes.